believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, and three is made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. So Ed, we're anxious to hear your experience with those steps.
Thank you. My name is Ed and I'm an alcoholic. And as I pondered this the last couple of days doing some readings and stuff like that, this afternoon, I kind of took a break. It's been busy. I've had some stuff to do. But I took a break this afternoon and I was really going to do some cramming for this tonight. And I put down about 5 pages of crap. And nothing felt right. I didn't feel at peace with myself. I didn't feel nothing. I forgot one basic thing. I didn't ask God for help. And when I did that today, I felt at peace. And I got about a half a page of notes. Just kind of key points that hopefully God will let me touch on if he wants me to. I try to put things up to God now in my daily life, small as well as big things. But as we get started tonight, we're going to talk about step two and step three. If you were here last week, I kind of got two stages or two times in AA. Not that I drank, but I didn't do much else early on other than put the plug in the jug. I got probably half the first step right, and my life wasn't unmanageable because I put the plug in the jug, or so I thought. But looking back, I still had a fool and a sick man running my life. And until I got step one down, not much changed. And it didn't much change after that because I always believed in God. But I didn't know how to put God in perspective in my life and where he should be placed. How to be utilized, how to utilize God. And I got everything backwards. God's first and he utilizes me. For my whole life, and especially while I was drinking, I put things in between me and God. And I never felt part of, always felt separate from, always felt angry and alone. And I kind of didn't believe that I was going to, I thought maybe God could restore me sanity. I didn't believe that he would, because I didn't feel like I was worthy. But if I look back beyond that, and I was able to do that finally, getting the sponsor I have now, we went through the steps. And since that time, I've taken a lot better look at these steps, working with a couple of guys. God's always been there for me. God's always been there to save my bacon. There's a few times that I probably should have died through my own actions, and it wasn't my time. And God's been there to save me. So if my higher power is willing to do that, it's fairly easy today to believe that he can restore me to sanity. I'm still waiting for that, by the way. I think I'm still half insane, but that's okay. It's in a good way. So I had to kind of figure out, it's been put a couple different ways. Do I believe in God with a big G or a little G? Is God a big and powerful God, or is he a little God? Or am I just mouthing the words and saying God runs my life and I'm still running my life? Which is it today? I have to figure that out and believe that if I do the next right thing, and that's always come out in figuring out that sometimes I still make mistakes. Sometimes I, screw up. But knowing that God is or is not is a real simple question for me today. I couldn't figure that out for the longest time. So believing he could restore me to sanity, it's kind of simple today. But it took me a lot of years to get there. I got part A and part B in my recovery, like I said. And I went through a lot of years not putting God in the right place. So that's why I kind of tied two and three together. if I can figure out that God could restore me to sanity, that means he's got a lot of power. Not that I didn't know if he would or not, but he could. That's a pretty powerful being. And looking back on my life where God's been there for me and has saved me, and when I call upon him, he's been there. You know, the second half, the first step, I couldn't manage my own life sober or drunk. I made a lot of mistakes because I wasn't changing my life after I put the plug in the jug, because I didn't have anybody running my life but me. I run it right off a cliff. And it's taken a long time. And I guess it has to become about a choice each day. Do I want to keep running my life the way it was, or do I want to ask God to run my life? You know, I went through so much crap today in my head, and I read 12 and 12. I read Joe McHugh. I listened to a couple leads on YouTube, and you know, all that stuff might be well and good that I wrote down, and it probably was good for me to review all that stuff. But I try to keep it simple today. The key is willingness. Am I willing to try to change my life by doing something that maybe is a little uncomfortable, against my ego, to let go of the power in my life? And I find if I make that choice each day, admitting that I'm an alcoholic and asking God for help in my life today to guide me, I don't have all that chatter going on inside of me. But to tell you that happened overnight, I'd be a liar. I did the first three steps with my, I was about a year sober when I did my first three steps, and that was with my fourth sponsor. So that tells you how much I was listening and surrendering in AA. And sometimes when I did ask Jim to be my sponsor, he's here tonight, Jim B. I was late teens in sobriety. And I was running my life all that time, thinking I was doing the step work sometimes, thinking I had God in my life. And I was either going to get drunk, and I didn't want to get drunk, or I was going to put a bullet in my head. So I was back to the insanity part, and I knew it. I knew it, but it brought me to my knees, and I was willing. And that's where Jim came in. And believe me, I love my sponsor, Jim. He's done a lot of things for me. He's opened my eyes to a lot of stuff. But I really believe that the sponsors I had before, any one of them, would have done a really great job in my life if I'd allowed them in to help me. So I think sponsorship's a really good thing when you go through the steps, and not to run them on your own like everything else in my life I ever did. So, you know, I can go on all night about that, but I really believe if the simpler I keep this, knowing that God is my salvation in having a better life, if I surrender my will, my life over the care of God each and every day. And it's a choice. I can choose not to have that. And I've done that sometimes in my sobriety, or because of fear, I take things back sometimes, or, you know, my ego takes over, you know, because things are going good. But hopefully I don't let it go to the point where it continues on and starts ruining my life. You know, I came to believe, well, that doesn't mean I believed instantaneously or made a decision to turn my will and my life over the care of God. I made a decision it was over time. So when Jim and I went through the steps, I was still foggy in a lot of ways. I was still an angry person. I was still a liar, a cheat, a thief, you know, all that stuff. But I don't believe on most of those things today. And if I am, I still think I'm a better man than I used to be. And I have had to, with the help of other people in my higher power, remove a lot of the things that are blocking God in my life, the things that are between me and God that keep God out. And it's part of the journey. And this, I think for me, I'll speak for me, that 2 and 3 have to come. Well, 1 you got to have. We all know you have to do that perfectly. But 2 and 3 it better be a good foundation before we go on to the other steps. Because I don't think with a, if I'd have done it properly, I think if I had 2 and 3 down, 4 and 5 wouldn't have been so bad. You know, and that's another story for next week. But I don't want to keep beating a dead horse. To me, the key is willingness and the choice each day to bring God into my life. And is God a big G or a little G? Today, I decided to have God a bigger part of my life. Because I say today, keep God in the conversation. Every day and in every conversation, either silently inside or verbally, keeping God in the conversation. But that's come with time. I strive to keep what I got and keep growing that peace that I have inside of me. And that's only through working the steps. And like I said, 1, you got to do pretty much perfect, or 2 and 3, you got to build a good foundation for the rest of the steps. So, you know, I'm not going to beat a dead horse. I hope you guys got a lot of questions. I can maybe go in a little more depth, but that's all I got right now.
Thanks, Ed. So, yeah, we'll go ahead and open this up to questions now. Anybody that has a question, just go ahead and take yourself off of mute. And then go on ahead. So who's going to start us off?
Hey, Ed.
Hey, Chad.
You're an alcoholic. How long was it before you found your God in your life that you understood?
Well, I, you know, I can't really answer. It was like I woke up one day and there was peace inside of me. I've always been looking for God. Hell, I went to the church, and I went to street church when I was young. Right out, when I was drinking, I went to street church and all that's people's houses. But it's not like the God I have today. And then my God is ever growing and ever changing. The more I get to know Him, I think it was when I finished the steps with Jim. Not finished them, but went through the steps, and they've been on ever growing. And then one, the step that I key on now, I know it's not here yet, but is 11, because that has got me really close to my higher power. I'm not perfect, and I don't pretend to be, but it's probably been, I was probably 20 years sober. That's pretty sad, but that's my story, you know. I had bits and pieces of it before, probably, but it went because I didn't do anything, that no step work to follow it up, and no prayer and no meditation in my life, my first 20 years of sobriety, that much. So how can you find a God and grow a relationship with God if you don't do anything? So did that answer your question, Chaz?
Yeah, I guess so. I didn't believe in God when I came in, and Merle Grotto told me, if you don't believe, just make believe. I did that right from the get-go until I found a God.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, I always believed in God, but it was a little G. Like I said, God's there, but I've screwed up so much, or I'm not worthy or whatever. So it was always like a little G in my life until I made God a priority.
All right, who's next?
Hi, Ed. This is Jim B.
Uh-oh. You got a whole list, don't you? He knows me about the best.
Well, in the second step, it talks about being restored to sanity. and me and you talked a lot about this, and I think you could elaborate a little bit more, is some of the insane thinking you have even though you're sober. You know, some of the thoughts, those tendencies, those old ways.
Well, you know, and I was thinking about this the other day, you know, the longer I'm sober, the smarter I think I am sometimes, or the conversation goes in my head, you know, and then little stupid thoughts will come to me, you know, you can get away with that, you know, and it still happens. And I got to chuckle at them because some of that old thinking don't go away. You know, I'm an insane person. Well, what's the old saying I keep saying my dad taught me? Inferiority complex is with delusions of grandeur. And I still get those thoughts that I'm important, that I have an opinion. You know, I got a broke thinker. I heard that a long time ago. And I got a broke thinker, and it's never going to think right. It's not going to work right without the help of a supreme being in my life. It's gotten a lot better. But it's not there yet. I don't know if it ever will be, and I don't really care. I'm just doing the footwork, to help the potential growth. Maybe, some of the insane thoughts, you know, when they started having, beer at country fair, I don't know, maybe 6 months or a year ago, I was standing in line. There was only one register you could get booze at. First of all, I figured that out, you know. And there's a stack of 12-packs sitting in there, right by the rest of your register. And my thought goes, you know, I could pick that up and buy that. I mean, you know, I'm 30-some years sober, and I have them stupid thoughts. They're there. It's just I don't act on them anymore. You know, like the biggest, best word you ever taught me was pause. I'm able to pause now with some of them stupid thoughts. You know, if I don't act on them, they usually go away. And they don't. If I don't go away, I better talk to somebody about it. So, yeah, my brain don't work like other people's. So it works like all of yours. It don't. So I don't know. You need any more elaboration on that, Jim?
No, I was thinking mine was always, I'm so young, and I'm in this program. I could probably survive if I went back out, blah, blah, blah. You know, the dumb thinking. Or if I got a job in California, it'd probably be better. Or, you know, you start thinking all this stupid stuff, and your brain's going 100 miles an hour, and you're telling yourself, I wish this would stop. And I remember screaming into the pillow at nighttime saying, God, stop this, you know, this crazy thinking. And that's where the step two came in, you know?
Yeah, sometimes I can't put it into words, but I can remember I'm probably 2 or 3 or 4 years sober. And I remember a couple guys that come in 3 or 4 years after you just come in, and they're 6, 8 months sober. And they're getting healthy. So I thought, I'm judging their outside because they're smiling all the time. And I'm feeling like, what the hell's going on here? Well, I wasn't doing anything to change those thoughts processes. I wasn't doing anything productive in my life other than whining and complaining and all negative thought processes. So if you're not doing anything to change the crap in your head, you're just going to have crap in your head. I wasn't listening to suggestions in the program at all early on. And so I suffered. And I tried doing it on my own. I picked sponsors that weren't going to ask anything of me. And I left the ones that were trying to help me, that were a little bit hard on me or asked me questions or whatever. So I think there becomes a point where you have a surrender when you come in today because you know you can't drink and your life's screwed up. And I really believe, at least for me, at some point, there had to be for me an emotional surrender, an emotional bottom. And it took a long time for that to happen, that I would surrender to. And all those nutso thoughts, you know, and I tend to try to forget about those crappy times, but they're there. You know, and without the footwork and without fellowship and a good sponsor, they're going to come back. They're going to come back. If I don't continue to grow in this program, try to give it away. I'm a little less messed up than I was when I met you, Jim. and I'm not claiming to be perfect. So it is what it is, but I'm getting comfortable with who I am today, and I think that's what's good about this. Even in my imperfectness, I can be comfortable with myself. So any other questions you got, Jim?
I'll reserve.
We don't get a real chance to talk.
I'll reserve my time until later.
Okay. You're going to follow up at the end. It's okay. I'm not so sensitive today.
All right.
Hey, thanks. Anybody else got a question for Jim about me? I'm glad you're on mute. I didn't hear what you said. Anybody else?
Well, I've got a question. You were saying at the beginning, of your program, or when you decided that you were an alcoholic, did you go to meetings regularly, or did you just go like once a month or once a year?
Oh, I went all the time. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times a week. I went all the time.
Oh, you did? So
I like you people.
Did you sit there or what?
Oh, no, I had fun. I had fellowship time. It was all fun and games and nothing serious, if you know what I mean. You know, heck, I had Charlie A as a friend. He was one of my sponsors. I mean, you can't not be around him and not laugh. So he couldn't get me to work the steps to save my ass. So, yeah, I went to a lot of meetings. Going to a lot of meetings is not going to save your life. It's not going to keep you sober. I mean, you can be well entertained in AA. It feels somewhat safe and somewhat protected in AA. But if you don't engage in your own recovery and do some step work, you can die without picking up a drink. And I almost did. So.
Who's next?
Jack, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jack.
Hey, good to see you. Thank you for sharing. Hey, I've got a question. Chaz touched on it, too. I think you've heard me talk about this before. You know, when I came to AA, I had no belief in a higher power, and I would try to prove to you that there was no such thing. You know, if you get a new guy, you're sponsoring a guy, and you're convinced he's done a thorough first step, and he feels like that, he either has pushed away any childhood belief in a higher power, or he has never believed. How do you walk him through a second step, you know, if he's an atheist or just unwilling?
Well, I've had that experience. And all I do is what I've done is take him through the steps the best of my ability, how I was taken through them. You're not going to change anybody's opinion. You're not going to force them to change the way they believe. All I can do is share my experience, strength, and hope. And I said that last week, my experience, strength, and hope, that if I didn't get a God in my life, I suffered. If you want to run your own life into the ground, I can't do anything about it. We offer a new way of life, and that new way of life is putting a higher power in charge of your life, in my opinion. And to me, that's God. I was an agnostic to the extent of believing in Jesus Christ. Right, so I use that as a big excuse. It was bogus. It was smokescreen. I wasn't ready because I wasn't ready. And just because I put the plug in the jug doesn't mean I was willing to change my life. I came in here at an emotional, with an emotional gun in my back. And I wasn't really ready to get rid of my preconceived notions of a supreme being. And I can't do that to anybody else. All I can do is share my experience, strength, and hope with my higher power in that journey. And the one person I think of, I mean, and I love him dearly. I have sent him to agnostics in the program, and he has gone to them and talked to them about some of the steps that this is, because I can't change my wording on this because I believe in the God, and God is throughout the steps. So, but I can't force him to change, and I can't lead him down and suggest, just do what you got to do, and I'll be here for you when you're ready to do something different. You know, all I ask them to do is remain open and teachable. And that's about everything in life. Remain open and teachable. So, but I can't drag a horse to water and make him drink. It just ain't going to happen. So, did I answer your question, Jack?
Absolutely. Thank you. You got it right. Appreciate it. Thanks, Ed. Good to see you.
Good to see you too, man.
Anybody else?
I'm an alcoholic. My name's Susan.
Hi, Susan.
You talked about the fact that you have two sides to your program, and you had the period of time where you just didn't do much of anything, and then you came to that part where you got your faith. And I have two parts to my program. I got sober, and I had the faith, and then I had a period. I had 15 years of sobriety, and I drifted away, and I lost my faith. And I didn't lose my sobriety, but I spent 9 years not going to meetings and not practicing a program recovery. And I went from a big G to a little G. And what happened to me was I had an emotional crisis, I guess, an emotional bottom. And it brought me back to recovery. And right now I'm going through what I like to call a period of growth.
Yeah.
And I realized that I wasn't slipping, but I wasn't growing either. And God has kind of pushed me into a period of growth. And so what I kind of want to ask is, when you hit that period where it was either grow or go, was it a big thing, or was it just kind of like a realization that you either had to grow or go?
Well, I don't believe I was going to drink. I don't think that was in the picture. I think it was either put a gun in my head or do something about it. But previous to that, probably, I'm guessing, 12, 13 years sober. I'm driving to work, and I'm throwing up halfway to work because I was so afraid to go. I had a heart attack at 15 years sober due to stress. So there was things leading up to this, but I wasn't willing to surrender. And I saw all this stuff. I saw it happening. I still think I'm different in some ways, that I suffered more than everybody else. Well, I think it's a bunch of crap. We all suffer what we have to suffer to get where we're at. And I don't really believe, for me, that every step I took or didn't take got me sitting here today talking to you people. And I'm grateful for every step other than the people I hurt along the way. For me, it was a slowly sliding off a cliff. And not feeling part of it. It got worse and worse, and feeling so lonely and afraid, knowing that that was wrong with so many years in the program. Because I've seen so many people succeed in these rooms just by looking in their eyes. But I needed to do what I needed to do to hit that emotional bottom and spiritual bottom. So, and I think we all have to do that in our own travels and our own part of our own journey. So, I tried to be a help along the way and share my story the way I've seen it happen. Now, my perspective on things may be a little different than people that saw me back then of what I was going through on the inside, but I need to share what happened to me, the way I felt about it, and the way I believed it happened to me. And that's because it's the only story I got. So, yeah, it was a slow, slippery slope, the sliding down back into the pit. And I don't believe I'd have drank. I think I'd have put a bullet in my head. I was really close to that.
Thanks.
That's what I got, Susan.
Thanks a lot, Ed.
Thank you.
Who's next?
Hi, Ed. This is Lisa. Thank you. I really enjoyed tonight.
Hi, Lisa.
My question is, you talk about, you know, not drinking and still, you know, struggling with your program. And I guess I'm going to say sobriety because I think it's still part of it, you know, just because we're not drinking doesn't mean everything's fixed. But I honestly think that maybe that's not as different. I always thought when you got sober that it was about just not drinking, and that's not the way it is for me. And I'm certainly not struggling a lot, and I'm not at the place where you were when you really started to grasp it, but I think very little of this is about not drinking. because, you know, I'm 27 months in and still experiencing what caused me to drink, you know, so much. And so what you said tonight's really, you know, helpful. But I honestly think maybe it's a little bit more common because we're not fixed when we don't drink. What do you think?
Well, yeah, in some ways, it's all spiritual disease. You know, it's not really about the drinking, like you said. It's all spiritual. And it's how long I wanted to hang out and try to fight it and live my own life. Because I think in the back of my mind, I kind of knew what I was doing, but I was stubborn. I was fearful, you know, and angry because my life didn't turn out the way I wanted it to. And, you know, until I was ready to surrender, nothing changed. And I think that happens different for everybody to an extent. It has to do with a lot of different things, in my opinion. It had partially to do with my upbringing. My upbringing did not make me an alcoholic. But my dad was sober in AA for 39 years. It had made a big influence on my life. And I understand that today. And I try to use that more as a positive. But that did not make me a drunk. It did not make me an alcoholic. All my life experiences collectively made me spiritually sick, in my opinion, everything, because I wasn't willing to allow my higher power into my life to help change me. And until I'm ready to do that, I really think it's anybody's ready to do once they put the plug in the jug, not much is going to change in your life. And hopefully it happens quicker for other people than it happened for me. I needed to go through what I went through to be where I'm at today. Hopefully it takes people a lot less time. Their journey is their journey, and my journey is my journey. So I'm happy with where I'm at today. I think that's the most important thing. I didn't still start feeling comfortable in my own skin until I was almost 50 years old, and I'm 60 years old now. And I feel pretty good about my life. It's not perfect, but I love my life today. So did I answer your question?
You did. Thank you very much, Ed.
I'm Dwayne, alcoholic. I've heard people from time to time say that your higher power can be anything you want it to be, including a doorknob. What is your thoughts about that?
Well, it's kind of funny you mentioned it. I said I was listening to some leads on YouTube today, and this old timer comes up to this new guy in the program, and he's talking about God and everything, and he goes, "I don't believe in God." He's something to the effect of, "Well, you can believe in that chair then." And the new guy thought that was a pretty good idea or something to that effect. And the old timer goes, "Well, good. You don't have a fool running your life now." you know what I'm saying? So I can't run my life like that. But if somebody else wants to do it, have at it. And when you change your mind, come and talk to me. Maybe we can work some things out together. But I think we all have our own journey in this life. We all come into it AA because drinking sucked and ruined our own lives. And our life's falling down around us. We've got a gun in our back and a judge or a wife or a job. So we come at it a little bit different perspectives in the beginning. So we all have a little bit different recovery, but they'll all run along parallel lines. Suffering, surrendering, and recovery, and sharing. So, and like I did earlier today, I went back to the old me. I made it real complicated with these 5 pages of crap. Until I asked for help, my life did become simple today. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
So everybody's journey is a little different. So, but we help each other along the way because they run along parallel lines. So.
Well, I just always wondered how I would meditate to a doorknob, but anyway, but I have heard that oftentimes in a meeting, so
yeah.
I appreciate your answer.
If you meditate to a doorknob, you might get a black eye when you pass out.
Anyone else?
I have another question, Ed. You know, you've talked both weeks about your dad, and your dad had really long-term sobriety, and you talked about you were involved when you were, you'd go to a lot of meetings with your dad when you were younger. Do you think that that had, I'm sure it had a positive and a negative influence on you, but I was wondering if that was some of the cause of the beginning, your first 10 or 15 years of just being antagonistic, because I know that I didn't want to be like my father, and I just wondered if that played a part in your early sobriety.
Well, yeah, I have had a long time to digest all my past life, and I've got to say yes. I love my dad dearly. I miss him immensely. He was a very big influence on my life. I never wanted to be like my dad. I think I'm a little softer, gentler version of my father, hopefully. I don't think I wanted to walk in his shoes. I could not walk in my old man's shoes. It was a different time, different generation, a little harder outer crust, a little tougher sobriety. And that's hard because you jump in at chapter five. That's what they did back then, jump in at chapter five. I don't want to take his inventory, but I think he had a big influence on my life. And you know how people, when they go back out, they say, hey, spoiled your drinking? Hey, spoiled my drinking from day freaking one. Because I knew what the other side was. People running through my house when I was 10 years old, hearing their sad stories, drunks wandering through, people staying overnight, playing cards all night long. I had Alcoholics Anonymous in my life when I was 10 years old. Yes, it played a big influence on my life. And it sucked early on. I didn't want to be my dad. I didn't want to be a freaking drunk. There's no way I could be an alcoholic. I can handle this, all that bull crap. I had to finally put in perspective who I was versus my father and where my father fit into my life, because I hated that man for a lot of years. And I think I've done a pretty good job of that. I miss him. Yeah, what can I say? I miss my mom. And I think that's a good thing. But it's different times, and even different times in AA than it was when my father got sober in 69. So, yeah, a very big influence on my life.
Anyone else? If not, we can go ahead and wrap it up here. So we certainly want to invite you back next week to hear Ed continue. Is it step four and five next week, Ed?
I'm probably going to do four and five together.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Do we have any other announcements from membership?
An alcoholic, and my name's Terry. If you have any meeting changes, any meetings that are opening, or any Zoom meeting changes, could you please let me know so I can update the website? Thank you.
Jim, alcoholic, the Saturday night Fairview Zoom edition speaker meeting, Michael O. from Waterford, Ontario will be the speaker.